The date should be... No. Today is 20th, is it? Okay. Very good afternoon to all, eh? Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 20th of May 2017. Sunday, Wu Ping Ching Sir. So we are about to start our Dhamma class. So let us compose our mind, yeah? Develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us pay respect to Trimpa Jam. Buddhang Pichuhime. ธัมมังปุจเจมสังฆังปุจเจมโอเค you can be seated today before we continue with our six patriarch platform sutta I have some notes in front those who just came in you can have them I will do a quick review this is based on our Tuesday class 1st of May So that day, I think there were some new people. So there was an introduction for newcomer. So if you want to understand more, you listen to the recording. Then the benefits of performing devotional practices of puja, like what we always do. But for Tuesday class and Thursday class, we have the puja offering. Then we also chant following our chanting book. The aspiration that we can make basing on our understanding of the significance of all the various puja offering that is to help Kayanamita to develop more wholesomeness and more understanding by channeling our merits towards the path of Dhamma, towards wholesomeness, to develop wisdom, understanding, virtue, and spiritual powers, all these things. Then after that, we continue with our sharing. We were using the book, The Buddha and His Teaching, chapter 16, page 298. So that sharing is to let Kayanamita have a deeper understanding of the Jataka story of the Buddha. How did the Jataka story come about? And the life of the Buddha, including his essential teaching, the essential Dhamma. So in chapter 16, we touch on the characteristics of Dhamma. So the reason why the Buddha want us to chant the salutation to the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha is to let us understand what these triple gems are. As Buddhists, we take refuge in the triple gem. And what are these triple gems? Who is the Buddha? And what is this Dhamma that the Buddha has taught? And what are the Sangha, the Aryan Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha? What are their qualities? So that when you cultivate, you won't go wrong. That's why this salutation is very important. Especially the first of the triple gem. A lot of Buddhists has great misconception about the Buddha. They get very angry if somebody were to try to destroy the Buddha Rupang or say bad things about the Buddha. All these are delusion because you don't understand who the Buddha is. The Buddha that Buddhists pay respect, take refuge in, is not the image. The image is one of the four objects of veneration, yes. We venerate this image because we recall to mind. It allows us to recall to mind the great virtue and wisdom of the Buddha. So the Buddha, being the great being, Sammasambuddha, he is the embodiment of his great virtue and wisdom. And he has this nine great virtue that we chant when we chant the salutation. Iti peso bhagava arahang Sammasambuddho. Then continue. So through that chanting, through that understanding of this nine great virtue, you realize the Buddha is such a great being. He's not only enlightened, he's fully enlightened. And he's worthy of respect, offering, and giving. Then he has perfect wisdom and virtue, teacher of man and God. The guy incomparable. Nobody can beat him as far as regarding the training of living beings to become enlightened. He is the teacher without comparison. And all these nine great virtues make him very, very unique, very supreme. That's why he is a Sammasambuddha. And he is the knower of all. Sukato Lokavido. Then Anuttaro Sammasambuddho. So all these are the great quality. Then the teaching that he has taught us, the Dhamma, it has this characteristic, which I have explained that the sanditiko, akaliko, ehipaseko, opanaiko, and pachatang, veditako, vinohiti. So if you were to meditate, cultivate this teaching, then you check whether that teaching that you cultivate or develop lead to this type of awakening or not. The Dhamma that you have studied or cultivated, does it lead to these five unique qualities or characteristics? The first uniqueness of this Dhamma or the teaching is it is sanditiko. The Dhamma can be realized in the here and the now. No need to wait till death. That's the reason why this teaching is so unique. If they tell you or promise you that after you die, you will go to the kingdom of God or what, then that is not sanditiko. You must die. Then after you die, you're not sure. You don't know where you go. The second characteristic is akaliko. This teaching is timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. Timeless. So if you cannot realize the enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond time, if you are still caught within the field of thought and knowledge, then this is not the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. That's why the awakening, the enlightenment, is cessation of form and mind. Everything ceases. That's why it's beyond thought, beyond time. Then this Dhamma stand up to investigation. It has the characteristics of ehipaseko. Means this Dhamma can stand up to investigation, inviting investigation. Because it's the truth. It will not go wrong. Then the other thing about this teaching is, after you cultivate, it will give rise to the characteristics of opanaiko. Opanaiko is leading inward, into the heart, leading to the realization of Nibbana. That is the fourth characteristic. And this is most important. If it doesn't lead inward into your heart or your nature to enable you to realize enlightenment, Nibbana, then that is not the teaching that the Buddha has taught. Then this teaching has one more unique characteristic. It is pachetang. Veditabo vinohiti. Pachetan means it can only be realized by the wise one, each for themselves, not by anyone else. So if you develop the meditation, then you think you are enlightened, then you have to check whether all these five qualities or characteristics are there or not. Especially pachetan. Pachetang means you must be the wise one, and there is no doubt, no need to check, no need to compare. There and then the form of mind will understand. Then the three universal characteristics of life, they are anatta, anicchang, and dukkang. You can put it in the other order, anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Their meaning are anicchang means impermanent nature of all conditioned arising entity. Only arise. They only arise when supporting conditions are there. When supporting conditions are no longer there, they cease to be. That's why it's impermanent. Because it's all conditioned arising, dependent originating. So all of conditioned arising Dhamma they have to be impermanent. Because everything is in a state of flux, ever evolving, ever changing. Condition change, things change. That's why the Buddha say everything is decay. Every moment, every instant. You look at nature, nothing is in a permanent, unchanging state. Everything is in a state of flux, vibrating, evolving, changing. You look at nature, you look at your own form and mind, you look at the flowing stream. All of the phenomena within the phenomenal world, even the traffic sound, everything that you come to perceive here, they are ever changing, evolving, flowing, according to condition. They are never static. Even the stream, they are ever flowing. It's alive. It's not dead. Then your thought process, your feeling, your vibration, your perception, your aggregate of mind, they constantly arise and pass away. So all these are the universal characteristics of change. So because it has this universal characteristic, the next characteristics of suffering, dukkha, will follow. Suffering arises because of craving, clinging, and grasping to impermanent entities of phenomena. So impermanent entities of the phenomenal world of consciousness, we are wanting things your way, which is against nature way. This implies not able to get what one desires through one's habitual tendency born of self-delusion. It will bring about suffering. And mind make our day because upon contact, the senses can give rise to sense door consciousness within our form and mind. That's why our mind is like a magician. Through consciousness it creates. And because it's dependent originating, it's impermanent, it goes the way of nature. If you perceive it with negativity, with delusion, you grasp at it, cling at it, hold on to it, and want it to be forever the same. It can't. Well, it goes the way of nature. That's why when you cannot accept the reality of nature, you will give rise to suffering. That's why suffering is the ultimate characteristic when you don't have wisdom. So you must have wisdom to see things as they are, to accept the reality of the moment and be at peace. Otherwise, when you want things your way, which is not nature's way, craving will arise. And craving is the cause of suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, hence anatta, empty nature, non-self. So anatta here, the definition is very clear. Within the conditioned world, everything is dependent originating. Only mighty nature rolling by, hence empty. There is no permanent unchanging entity for one to cling on to, hold on to, grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. No such thing. Then the final summary of the first noble truth is very important. When you deludedly grasp onto the five aggregate of form and mind as the I and the me and the mind, you will be afflicted and suffering will arise. So Brahadeo make reference to the four signs of a sick man, an old man, a dead man, and a samana from the life of the Buddha, and the five daily contemplation as taught by the Buddha to expand on his understanding. So this final summary is very important. That's why the Buddha said every day you must contemplate on the five daily contemplation. They are related to the first noble truth reality. Then the fourth sign that the Buddha saw and left the palace in search for truth is also having a lot to do with the first noble truth reality. So all these are important, essential dhamma for you to understand. then the two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind, very important. First aspect is, as a human being, you have a physical body, which is your form, physical form. Then you have the mind, with its four aggregate of feeling, perception, content or consciousness, or sankhara and consciousness. Combine the two, you become the five aggregate. That's why the human body or the living being is the first aspect of the five aggregate. Then the second aspect of the five aggregate is as a mental five aggregate. Every moment of consciousness, you have the four aggregate of mind. But the fifth aggregate, which is the form aggregate, the external form that you brought into mind through perception, via perception, together it becomes the five aggregate. So this second aspect is very important. External form brought into the mind means mental form via your perception aggregate. Then together with the four aggregate of mind, every moment of arising of a conscious experience means like seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile and thought consciousness. They are the mental five aggregates of form and mind. The so-called living being, five aggregates of form and mind, first aspect is just a karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for us to come to this existential world, to develop the cultivation and experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. So use it with wisdom to arise the appropriate right thought, right speech and right action to be a blessing to all and not to be deluded by it. So this is the most profound understanding. If you understand this, you will know how to live life. Your mind will be different. You will not have any delusion, attachment, suffering and all those things. Then the five daily contemplation, old age, sickness and death, separation from loved one or prized possession. And the final contemplation is we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. Then the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. When you understand the Dhamma, you understand the secret of life. So this is so beautiful. You understand the mundane aspect. You also understand the supramundane aspect. So the first and second Noble Truth covers the mundane aspect. The first Noble Truth talks about realities of life and existence, the eight reality. Then second Noble Truth talks about the cause of suffering, which is craving, born of self-delusion. Then the third Noble Truth, which is the supramundane aspect. The Buddha said Nibbana, or enlightenment in the here and now, can be realized. And this is possible before you die. Then there is the mundane cultivation leading to the supramundane realization, which is the fourth Noble Truth. So fourth Noble Truth, cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path leading to the end of all suffering or enlightenment. If there isn't the unconditioned, then freedom from the conditioned world will be impossible. This is what the Buddha said. Cessation of form and mind leading to the realization of Nibbana liberates completely. Yeah. So this is the short note. These are useful short note. So I hope you can make use of it. Okay. Any question on this? You don't have? Then we can continue with the Six Patriarch Sutta. Okay, we will turn to page 1. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear, receive and uphold, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Then we turn to page 379, chapter 10, the final instruction. Oh, this is the last chapter, is it? Yeah, the last chapter. And this is very good. This one is very good. This chapter is on the final instruction of Huineng. So we will read the sutta. One day the master summoned his disciple Fa Hai, Ji Chang, Fa Ta, Shen Hui. Got two, Ji, Zi Chen, Zi Chen. All this, I don't know your actual Mandarin word. You have it or not? You read it out. Zi Tao, Zi Che, Fa Chen. Same as our Tang Jia, Fa Chen. Fa Chan, Fa Chan, and Fa Zhu. Okay. Zi Che, okay. 知道, 法正, 法正, okay, Sado. Exactly 10 of them. 10 of them. And said to them, you are not like other people. After my passing into extinction, Miss Parinibbana, you should each be a master in a different direction. I will now teach you how to explain the Dhamma without deviating from the tradition of our school. So this is very important. This is Huineng's instruction to the disciple. He wants all the 10 disciples to go in different direction to spread the Dhamma, because they are already enlightened. So they have the Dhamma. It's just like during the Buddha's time, he told all the Arahant, no two shall go in the same direction. You have to spread out and teach. But here, the instructions are very good. Huineng say, first, bring up the 3 classes of Dhamma Dong, and then use the 36 pair of opposites, so that whether coming or going, you remain in the Bodhi Mandala. Means you won't debate. While explaining all the Dhamma, do not become separated from your self nature. This is very important. No matter what you teach or what you share, it shall never separate from your self nature. Should someone suddenly ask you about a Dhamma, answer him with his opposite. If you always answer with the opposite, both will be eliminated and nothing will be left, since each depends on the other for existence. Means you have to teach them all this Dhamma that comes about, especially the thought-based Dhamma. Mind make are they? They are made of words and concepts. That's why they have duality. So when you can point out the duality, then they will come to understand that these are relative Dhamma, not the ultimate Dhamma. So relative Dhamma are not true Dhamma. That's why I point out the opposite. So these are instructions to the disciple. But more important is to understand what the 6 patriarchs meant. These are guidelines he has given. He said, stay within this, then you won't go wrong. Then whatever you teach, don't separate it from your self nature. Because all Dhamma arise from the self nature. Then whatever they ask you, you explain and show it to them the opposite, the duality, so that they will realize and transcend duality and awaken to the truth. But what is more important is to have the final ability to teach according to condition, situation, and the requirement at that time. To do that is not easy. You must have very, very profound understanding. And your nature must have the ability to feel and to understand. Then only you can teach according to the condition and the requirement. Then you will accord and flow accordingly. But most of them are not at that level. That's why Huineng has to give this instruction. So this instruction will keep them in focus. In focus. Okay, we read through the commentaries. One day the master called his room entering disciple. This one means all those enlightened disciple can enter his room together for a talk, actually to give instruction to them. They are called room entering disciple because they have received the transmission of the master's teaching or Dhamma and were therefore permitted to enter his room. That's why they are enlightened beings. Then the first of the ten was Pahai. You remember him. He edited the Sexpatria Sutta and was a great disciple. He put his name at the head of the list here because no matter what, he has to be number one. Give me a minute. I think the fan is blowing me. Why did you on the fan at the back? Just off it here. It's blowing it to me. Because here is no humid. Humid, and you blow the humid wind to my physical body. It will affect this physical body. Thank you. Off it. You want to on, you can on those fan on the wall. That one is for ventilation, it's better. Because if you blow to me, humid, and I keep on receiving all this, my physical body will have problem. So before it happens, I better get it turned off. And if you feel that the fan is affecting you, you shift your position. Because we have to understand, different place you go, the condition are different. That's why you go to Tuesday class, you are lucky, we got aircon. You go to Thursday class, you also have aircon. But I like Wu Ping Ching Sir is because you have to endure, understand or not? Here depend on the weather. If weather good, then you have the breeze. Usually the rain will help to make it cool. Then normal time is like today, quite typical, humid and all those things. But under such condition, if you can still attentively listen to the Dhamma, then meditate means you have the understanding, you have the faith. This is what you want. Otherwise, a lot of people feel very sleepy, then they don't want. They say, "Aiya, this place is not conducive." But your faith bring you here. Then I want you to go through so that you understand, so that you can meditate in whatever situation or condition. Then you can also learn Dhamma in whatever condition or situation. Okay, I'll read on. Then Ji Chang, was the Dhamma thief, he was sent by the Sun Tzu, who later reformed and joined the master. Vata was the arrogant bhikkhu who had read the Lotus Sutta over 3,000 old times, but couldn't bring himself to put his head on the ground before the master even once. So these are the recollections. Then Sun Hui was the 13-year-old child who had talked back to the master. He replied. He thought he very wise. There was also the Ji Chang, Ji Tong, and Ji Chen, also known as the Flying Cat Chang, Zi Tao, and Fa Chan, Fa Chen, and Fa Chu. These were the master's 10 great disciples. The master said, the 10 of you should each be a master teacher in a certain direction and receive offerings there from humans and God. I will now teach you how to spread the teaching or Dhamma without straying away from the tradition of our Southern Enlightenment school or Dhammadaw teaching. So, because of the way Huining teach the six patriarchs, they call it the Southern School. You know why Southern School? Because his teaching is taking you direct to the true mind. That's how you can become enlightened straight away. So this one I have to explain a bit. So Huining's teaching, Huining's teaching. Takes you direct to the true mind. Means he don't want to waste time on the mundane mind, or the practice, the method, the technique and all. So straight away, you realize this true mind, you become enlightened. So this is called the sudden teaching. Because you awaken straight away. And this one is the fastest. So this one doesn't waste time like all the other traditional teaching which are thought-based. So thought-based teaching, they take you in a different manner. They start with the thought process. Then using the thought, they read the sutta. Then they read the sutta, and using the thought, they come out with the teaching. That's why the method and the technique and the so-called teaching come from the thought. So the instrument you are using to meditate is thought. But you want to realize that enlightenment that is beyond thought, how can it happen? True or not? Well, the instrument you use is thought, thought-based. That's why he said, no. Who is nothing? The thought is nothing. Chant, who is chanting? The thought is chanting. So if you start like that, it's very difficult to go beyond thought, beyond mind. And the worst is, all these are not explained to people. When they read the sutta, they interpret the sutta. Then they say, Buddha teach like that. Or he said, the Buddha teach anapanasati. So instead of mindfulness of the in and out breath, the method and technique become something else. Understand? They ask you to focus on the breath. Then sometimes they move it to other object of meditation. They say you go to the rising and falling of the abdomen and all those things. Then they got a lot of interpretation. Then sometimes the anapanasati has been modified. They say you feel the tip of the nostril, the place where the air enter and touch the tip of your mouth or the what, and feel the feeling there. Some they ask you to focus on the breath, go into absorption, concentration. So all the instruction never defines the meditation. Well, meditation has nothing to do with all these method, technique, and instruction. These are only a series of words or instruction given to do certain things. And it has nothing to do with mindfulness. It has nothing to do with the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why all this thought-based meditation will trap you for very long. Then what you do is, they thought this is meditation. They thought you must sit. You must go to retreat, very quiet place, where the environment, the setting is all very conducive. Then you feel very quiet, very calm, very peaceful. You thought you have improved. Like Thursday class, I remember Sister Tammy, before the class start, she told us that she just go back to work after 1.5 years of full-time cultivation. Then he realized when she go back to work, the sankhara start again, activity start again, the mind is not so peaceful as before. We have before full-time, condition all very conducive and more quiet. So I told her, you have to understand why I say the real cultivation is life itself. You don't go into life itself, you cannot. You cannot be heedful and mindful in the midst of life, then it doesn't help. Because what you do within the quiet environment when you are not working, you cannot be tested. And these are conditioned state. The condition is favorable, that's why you become more calm, more peaceful, more mindful. But when you go out into real life situation, you cannot do it. You are no longer able to be mindful, heedful. And the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. So as long as you step into life, go back to work, go back into career, you cannot cope. And then you realize most of the time you are heedless. Because this is thought-based meditation. But the true meditation will transform you when you follow what Hui Ning teach. When you go direct to the true mind. The true mind is the silent mind. Always remember. The moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware. So this is the true mind. Whatever meditation you do, you have to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful. So this is the heedful mind. So mind in sati. Leading to heedfulness. So you cannot develop mindfulness, which is a silent mind. You cannot develop heedfulness. Because after you develop the mind in sati, this one you have to stabilize it to become ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path to be heedful. That's why Hui Ning, he teaches differently. He said, you must recognize your true mind, your true nature. Yeah. There are two minds, he said. One is the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the heedless thinking mind. That one creates a lot of consciousness and the phenomenal world. The other one is when everything ceases, everything becomes still, silent. That is your true mind. That's why that one is aware. That is the essence of mind. That one is aware of silence. The stillness of nature. Because there is no sense data to create sense or consciousness. And yet, you are aware. Which means that one is not dependent originating, condition arising. That is your true mind. Independent of condition, and yet you can be aware. who is aware of silence, aware of nature, there is no condition there. There is no phenomena there. There is no thought there. It's just an awareness. It doesn't perceive. It just knows that this is the true mind, the stillness. Then activity starts from there. From there, all activity arises. From the silence, the stillness, the mundane mind arises, the consciousness arises, the phenomena will arise, activity of mind, the five aggregates arise. That's why when the fifth patriarch transmits the Diamond Sutta to the sixth patriarch Hui Ning, he came to the path on the true mind. Then Hui Ning become completely awakened. Because he told, the fifth patriarch told the sixth patriarch Hui Ning, he said, this mind, the mundane mind, is not the true mind. But you have to learn how to use it and not be deceived or deluded by it. He came to great awakening. Because earlier on, nobody explained this to him. So he didn't know how to use. Then after that, he proclaimed back to the fifth patriarch, how amazing is it that this true nature is already perfect by itself. It's already complete. Nothing else is needed. And yet, everything arises from this true nature. Means all Dhamma arise from this true nature. That's why from here everything arise, and to here everything return. That's why he completely understood the thing. Then he know that creation comes from the five aggregate, the mundane mind, which is part of your form and mind. And this form and mind is for you to use, for you to come to this existential world, to the conditioned world, as a human being in this life. Then later on you take other realm of existence as a living being within your respective realm of existence. And this is your segmented form and mind, segmented life. And you have taken birth so often, you got so many of these segmented life, countless, over the aeons and aeons of birth and death. Which one is you? None of them are you. All these are condition arising entity, dependent originating. That's why you can't say, oh, that life I was born so and so, then I am that. Then when it died, did you die? You didn't die. But that is just a karmically conditioned form of mind, the segmented life. Then when you are born as an animal, as a dog, or as a mouse, or as a buffalo, cow, or horse, is that you? You will say, no, 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 I cannot be that. But the law of karma does manifest in that way. And when it manifests, these are your segmented life all over the past existences. Then you realize, of all these segmented life, none of them are me. Because these are all conditioned arising entity, karmically conditioned now. They are impermanent. And because they are impermanent, they are empty, they are not real. That's why the phenomenal world of existence, the phenomenal world of consciousness, they are not real. Then like the Diamond Sutta, he said, each year you wave on, everything is just the conditioned Dhamma. So the conditioned Dhamma are not real, empty. It's like, each year you wave on, zhu mong huan pao yin, yi lu yi lu dian, then ying zuo zhu si kuan. Means the conditioned Dhamma within the conditioned world, they are not real. They are like illusion. Huan is illusion, isn't it? And like a dream state, mong, dream state. Pao is like a bubble, Ying is like a shadow. How real are they? They are not real. Then sometimes they arise just split second. Zulu ilu tian, like a flash of lightning, they are gone. That's like the present moment, split second is gone, like a flash of lightning is gone. So you should contemplate them thus. Then you will understand that all these are not real. My mate are they. Through delusion, you deludedly grasp, cling, hold, where you give meaning. You think you exist. You think your loved one exists. You think your possessions are real. You think whatever that your mind grabs onto, cling onto, hold onto are real. Even our society, you can see, our election just over. You can see the cause and effect, the law of karma, everything. So like the Buddha said, an evil person will also experience happiness as long as the evil deed has a bear fruit. But the moment the evil root bear fruit, he will suffer the consequence of that evil deed. And this is Dhammapada verse 119. Then 112 is about the good person. A good person may even experience suffering, the Buddha said, as long as that good deed has not bear fruits. But the moment that good fruit and the good deed bear fruits, this good person will experience happiness and joy. That's why must have faith in the law of karma. Do not be heedless. Do not simply do things. Then always have doubt. Ayo, why all these people cheat, plunder, steal, rape, and do all these things. Sometimes murder. And yet, they didn't suffer the consequence. They are still the leader and all those things, enjoying life and all those things. But then, see what happened when condition reverse. The evil deed bear fruits. So now is the evil consequence that they are going through. So this will teach you a very good lesson. Never be deluded anymore. No matter how tempting that position may be or that job may be, if it leads to evil, never take it up. That's why the Buddha said, all evil you have to avoid. It's not worthwhile to do. So initially they thought, oh, why not? So interesting. Suddenly, from nowhere, you become the new agey. You take over. Then you become so powerful. Then you can do what you like. Then they tell you what to do, you also do. Then this one got coming, got evil. What they call repercussion. So when the condition bear fruits, like what happened when they lost the election, they lost everything. So the condition now reverse. So those people who thought they can benefit from all this, but what they did is evil, causing so much disaster, so much suffering and misery to the country, to the people. To the rule, the constitution and all those things. And because of that, now the condition reverse and it serves them the other way. That's why the evil deeds bear fruits. And all this will happen. So keep to the teaching. Never deviate from the teaching. Never worthwhile to cheat, to deceive, to be involved with scandals and all those things. Never work on. Because righteousness is one of the quality of an enlightened being. You remember? Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. So, of good conduct is the disciple of the Buddha. Then the second one is of righteous conduct. This one you must have good conduct, righteous conduct. Then the third one is of wise conduct. You must have wisdom. Then the last one is you must have dutiful conduct. Do your duty. Because this form of mind is subject to karma. You got a duty towards nature's law, towards fellow living beings, towards the world, the consciousness and everything. So these are the quality that you have to maintain. Otherwise, you will have problem. So all these are in the teaching. It's for you to learn. You reap what you sow. That's why it's never worthwhile to violate the nature's law of karma. Never worthwhile to get involved with evil action, evil deeds. So all these are the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach, and we have to keep this in mind and never debate. Then when you understand all this essential Dhamma, the teaching, then keep to your true nature. Then you will not fall, because this one will tell you that all the rest are not real. Not real in the sense that the Dhamma aspect, the ultimate understanding, say it's not real. But within the conditioned world, it has its own conditioned Dhamma. There is such thing as life. There is such thing as the law of karma. That's why you cannot simply act, even if you understand it's not real. But the law of karma recognizes relationship. Human beings are as real as it can be. Life is as real as it can be, even though in the moment, split second, they can come. So the two aspects, the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma, you must develop the true understanding. Then with these two understanding, you can come to the existential world. And to come, you need the law of karma to arise a form of mind, the segmented form of mind, which is our form of mind. And this is the one for us to use, where this one is not what you think you are. This one is not you. This one is the condition arising segmented form of mind. So this one is the vehicle and the tool for you to come. This is not you, not real. That's why don't cling, don't hold, don't be deceived by it. So use it. Abide by nature's law, law of karma. Cultivate wisdom, cultivate understanding. Use it to develop all this virtue understanding so that you can be a blessing to all. So that your karmic nature is very beautifully developed. So that every life you come, whether you choose to come or you have to come, you will be beautiful. So this is what the Dhamma is all about. So now you have a clear understanding why this one is called the sudden teaching. Because if you go to the true mind, the moment you understand, you awaken. It's very fast. Whereas the thought-based one, you have to take a very long time until finally when your whatever parami or aspiration can arise, the appropriate condition for you to meet up with the wise, then Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. Then only the shift happens. That one can take very long. But if you go direct to the true teaching, the sudden teaching, you don't need to waste time on all those form, what they call thought-based meditation, form Dhamma. From form Dhamma, you see beyond form, you go to mind. Then mind Dhamma, you realize the truth, you go beyond mind. That's how you touch your nature. So instead of going through the three steps, you straight away go direct to the true nature. Means you go to the Dhamma that is beyond form, beyond mind. Through the direct seeing, the awakening. And that is the fastest. So all this, when you understand, your cultivation becomes different. Okay, can you understand? Very good. Okay. We go on. In speaking the Dhamma, the master went on, he said, the most important thing is to base your sharing or speech on the self nature. That's why you must speak from your nature, from your heart. Means you are using your understanding, you are not using knowledge. How does one do this? Suppose someone asks you a question about the Buddha Dhamma. Whatever his principle may be, is bound to have an opposite. You should answer him with the opposite. For example, coming and going are relative concepts. That's why he also, Sven Ho also know they are relative Dhamma. Without a coming, there is no going. Without a going, there is no coming. Coming is the prerequisite of going, and going can only result in from coming. Since opposite depend upon each other for existence, ultimately they both will be cast out, cancelling each other out so that nothing is left behind. There will be no more coming and no more going, for there will be no place left to go. So this is Chen Hua's way of explanation. But the true understanding is to transcend duality. Where duality is from the thought, the mundane mind, concept, words. They are not real. The true mind got no words. The true mind see things as they are, without relative truth. That's why when they look at the flag and the wind, they argue. One of the Samanera say the flag move, the other one say the wind move. These are relative Dhamma because they cannot see form. If they cannot see form, how can they go beyond form? So to them, whatever they perceive is real. Then through word they argue. Both also right, correct not? The guy that say wind move, he's also right. He say without wind, the flag cannot move. Then the other guy that say the flag move, he said, can't you see the flag move? You can't see the wind. Where got wind move? So you argue until the cow come home. For what? Want to be right. Who is right? Right according to you, understand? No point. So if you cannot see form, you cannot understand the unreality of form, then how can you see beyond form? That's why Huineng teach them one step up, because they are trapped in form. He said, your mind move. You understand? Suddenly, instead of wind and flag, he has gone to the mind. You understand? Wind and flag is still form Dhamma. Do you understand? It's still within the form. That's why you cannot see beyond form, you cannot see mind. So he take him like a kongan, your mind move. So you reflect and connect, why did Huineng say my mind move? Then you silent, then you will come to know, yala, where got wind, where got flag? Because the mind, like the Buddha say, is the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises, understand? That's why mind created flag and wind, and you argue. Without mind, where got flag, where got wind? That's why he said, your mind move. Then you go to mind, understand not? Then you don't go and get yourself entangled with external form. Your form are unreal, not what you think. Well, this is a conditioned world. Then when you go to mind, you realize mind also discriminates, understand not? The mind also have its views, opinion, and it also have its division. Yeah, this is the mundane mind. Then later on, you remember there's another stage where they continue this flag and wind story after Huineng passed away. Then there was one group of monks later on. They were actually discussing this topic. Why did Huineng say the mind move? Because they were trying to get the understanding. So as they were discussing, there's a lady who helped them to make whatever meals that they supposed to take. And they also feel funny. Every time certain monk like certain food. It's like this lady can read their mind. Then she will prepare that type of food. Then they come to realize, how come every time the food they want, it was made for them. Then that day, on the subsequent day, when they were discussing this, this lady passed by. Then she just say one word, one sentence. Where got mine? Within that instant, all the monks got stunned. Then after that, all of them become enlightened. The moment he say, where got mine, they realize their true nature. Then they realize, Hui Ning in the poem, when he counted Shen Xiu, he already say, originally there was nothing. Where can the dust alight? That's why straight away they realize the true mind, the true nature. They gone beyond. Then within that moment, they all become enlightened. Just so simple. That's why from form, you go to mind. From mind, you go to your true nature. You remember the four circle? External phenomenal world? Back to consciousness. The external phenomenal world is a world of form, physical form. Then you return to mundane mind consciousness. Then mundane mind consciousness return to the true mind. Then the true mind realize and cease, return to the source, which is Nibbana, the true nature. So all this is how creation come out. Then through this understanding, the creation cease to be. That's how you become enlightened. So these are very beautiful Dhamma. Okay? Then we continue. Whatever his principle may be, is bound, or this one we have done. Okay, we go to the page 381, next section of the sutta. The three classes of Dhammadong are the hips, the rhymes, and the entrances. The five hips are the five aggregates. Form, feeling, perception, sankhara, and consciousness. And the 12 entrances are the six sense object outside. They are the form, sound, smell, taste, tactile, means tangible object, and object of mind, and the six sense organ, your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body, and your mind. Then the 18 sense line are the six object, sense object, six sense organ, and the six type of consciousness. So the three classes of Dhammado are the three pair of sixes. The self nature is able to contain all Dhamma. It is the store envelope consciousness. If one give rise to thought, it turns into consciousness. So now you know, your true mind. If you give rise to thought, it becomes the consciousness. So this is how the mundane mind come out. And the six consciousness are produced. And the six consciousness are produced, which go out. Which go out the six organ and perceive the six sense object. Oh, the English is not so good. Because it's actually the six sense organ upon contact of mind arises the consciousness. Then after that, you have your sense data from outside. Then you input the content of consciousness. Thus, the 18 sense line arise as a function of the self nature. So this one is important. That's why Heinei say nothing is apart from the self nature. From this self nature, everything arises. If the self nature is wrong, it gives rise to the 18 wrong. If the self nature is right, it gives rise to the 18 rights. Evil functioning is that of the living being, while good functioning is that of the Buddha. What is the functioning based on? It's based on opposing Dhamma within the self nature. So this is the sutta's explanation. But a better explanation is like what I used to teach you all last time. It depends on the user, understand now. If the user has wisdom, then thought become wholesome. If the user doesn't have wisdom, has delusion, then thought become evil. So that true nature can never be evil, understand? The true nature is just the true nature. But because through the direct seeing, the form and mind awaken and it develops the wisdom. So when the wisdom is connected to the form and mind, like I explained last time, then this form and mind become enlightened, no more deluded. That's why it will not suffer anymore. It will not grasp, it will not cling, it will not hold. But if you haven't realized the true mind, you haven't enabled this true mind to develop the wisdom through the awakening or the direct seeing, then there is no wisdom connected to the form and mind. Then your form and mind is like a deluded human being or living being. It's like an ordinary puttajana. But the moment it insight into phenomena through the direct seeing and awaken, then the wisdom connected to it, then you become the enlightened being. You understand? I have explained all this before, so I no need to draw again. So without wisdom connected, the form and mind is deluded. Whatever you do, good according to you, is not the real good. But when the wisdom is there, connected to the form and mind, then this wisdom can never be deluded. That's why the form and mind will not do the wrong thing. So that is a better way to explain. Otherwise, it makes you a bit confusing. Then we see what Xuanhua explanation in the commentary is. Xuanhua say under the commentary, the self nature includes all Dhamma Dong. This is correct. And so it is called the store enveloping consciousness. This is the eight consciousness. They call it the Alaya consciousness, which may be transformed into the wisdom of the great perfect mirror. This one is according to Mahayana Sutta. Because when the wisdom is connected, it's transformed. From the Alaya consciousness, it becomes the great mirror, perfect mirror wisdom. You give rise to thinking and considering the store enveloped consciousness turns to the seven consciousness, which in turn produce the six. So this one we have gone through last time. Consciousness which goes out the six organ and perceive the six type of sense object. So it's explaining to you how all these things develop. Actually, the explanation that I gave to you all via the 12-link dependent origination is much more clearer and deeper. If you use the self nature correctly, it is the Buddha use. But if you misuse it, you are just an ordinary living being. How do the different usage arise? They come from the opposite within the self nature. Actually, self-nature got no opposite. Self-nature is just that thing, suchness, pure awareness, that pure nature. But because you have not developed the ability to connect to that self-nature, that's why you remain deluded. You remain a living being, puttajana, with delusion. But the moment you can silence your mind and connect, then you can have the understanding. You can see things as they are. That's why you can awaken. we are the direct seeing. Then the moment you awaken, this wisdom is there. That's why when the wisdom is connected, the form and mind become different. Then you can say the form and mind is enlightened, Arya. But that one is not you, where that one is conditioned arising. It's not real, it's impermanent, lead to suffering, it's empty. So the enlightened being will understand all this. But there is such thing as life. That's why the form and mind is connected to your karmic nature. And because of this karmic nature, this form and mind is able to connect to your true nature. That's why life becomes wonderful when you understand this. Without the form and mind, you cannot come to this existential world. And also without the form and mind, you cannot connect back to your true nature to develop the direct seeing to give rise to the wisdom. And if the wisdom is not there, this form and mind will have suffering, misery, problem, where it doesn't know how to deal with situation. So the whole of the Dhamma is understanding only this. That's why you have to go back to the true mind, silence your mundane mind, connect back, then use it to meditate, to awaken through the direct seeing. Then the wisdom that is developed through the direct seeing and the direct awakening, that will protect the form and mind from becoming deluded. That's how enlightenment can come to be. So enlightenment in the here and now is just so simple. That's why whatever meditation you do, in the name of meditation, it has to take you back to this true mind. Otherwise you cannot awaken. That's why the Buddha says heedfulness. Heedfulness is ever mindful. Use that ever mindful mind to cultivate noble eightfold mind, to understand the noble quality of an enlightened being. That's how you become enlightened. Otherwise you can't. That's why you must develop the right view, the right understanding. Then from there arise the right thought. Because when the wisdom is connected with the right view, this one will make sure the form and mind doesn't go wrong. That's how the form and mind can arise the noble evil path, subsequent power factor of right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then the four right effort. And also the samasati and the samasamadhi. So all these eight power factors will make you noble. That's how you become noble ones. Noble ones are enlightened ones. Okay? So any questions so far? What's the time now? Today I have to end early because I got a dinner. I got to fetch somebody. I had to end at about 5:30. Okay, maybe we stop here first. You got any question? If you have, you just raise your hand. We will pass you the mic. Otherwise, you can have your meditation. I give you half an hour. We can off the light. You do your meditation. Then after that, we can continue with our second session, where you can report your meditation and also ask whatever question.
Gracias.
can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation, and we can continue with our Q&A. Okay. Anybody who wants to report their meditation, you can put up your hand, the mic is here. Yeah, pass the mic over to someone.
Radio, will you experience, you share, maybe you will get advice.
Okay.
我在 Cameroon 观音器读那个 cultivating of the Bodhisattva wealth 的时候，你在那个书里面有 mention 到，Buddha 他 program 的这个 Dharma 只是 handful of leaf， So at the same time 我看到了这个 sentence 了以后，我就 arise 了这个 question。Then how about other leaf in the forest？ 它是怎样的 cultivate？
Okay，
所以我就 arise 了这个 thought。Then等我就过后我自己一直在想，我说因为 Buddha 他 proclaim 这个 Dharma， 他就变成了一个 pointer， 所以我们就有这个 guideline， then 跟着这个 Pariyatti Patipatti 去 cultivate， 所以、so, 这整个只是一个 handful of leaf， 这样那个 other leaf in the forest 他没有 proclaim，Then 是怎样的 cultivating？
Okay.
So 我回来了，我一直很想在 class 里面问你。But for the past whole last few classes 都一直没有那个 condition。Then on and off between， 我一直会丢这个 question 出来去想要。
Contemplate.
So then after 10 days， 上个拜二早上，我 on the way 去我走路去那个 LT station 的时候，我不知道I don't know 这个是我的看太多书了，还是那个 understanding unfold。当我在走路的时候，它的里面就 arise 说，它的 cultivating 是 based on no mark。Based on no mark.
No mark.
如果你你一定要 realize 就是他是用这个无我相、无众生相，他是一个没有相的那个的那个境界去 cultivate， 去 perfect 这个，去 cultivating 那个wisdom。所以，所以他那个时候你要 cultivating 的时候，就要去那个《金刚经》跟《六祖坛经》是很重要，因为它里面讲的是no mark。然后过后我又在想，这样子他要怎样的去 cultivating？ 这只是一个 no mark。我里面又在问，然后过后他又 unfold 就讲，你一定要 plant bohemai。那个Bodhisattva 的四个wealth， 这个 wealth 它会 bring you as a 一个 condition， 会去 unfold， 让你这个 no mark 里面，在这个 no mark 里面去realize 那个 wisdom。
它那个 five stages of Bohemian development 很重要，你要达到 fourth stage， when you can renounce samsara。Means you know that all these are not real。So 你有你自己的答案吗？还是你要我 explain？
我要你，这个是我
Okay, you listen, huh? Very good question, huh? Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You see, when it comes to the four, the handful of leaves that the Buddha mentioned under the Simsapa group. So this handful of leaves, which the Buddha talked about, they are just the Four Noble Truths. Four Noble Truths plus three turning. Because the Buddha explained under that sutta, he asked the monk, old monk, he said, he held in his hand a handful of leaves. He said, which is small, the handful of leaves or the leaves that is in the forest? Definitely, the monks told him the leaf in the forest is so much more. And the Buddha said, what he had understood is like the leaves in the forest. But what he has taught the monk are just a handful of leaves. Then he explained why and what are these handful of leaves. But these are conducive for enlightenment. The rest are not conducive for enlightenment. And because it's conducive of enlightenment, that's why he just teach the handful. So what he want to teach is just the initial, essential Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths and its three turnings, so that it can bring about transformation, enlightenment. So this part is the most important. And he said, what are these handful? They are the Four Noble Truths, the three turnings. But even he himself have to go through that as a bodhisattva. So your question is, what are the other understanding that he has developed which is beyond the handful of leaves? So the one that is beyond the handful of leaves, that's why during his 45 years of ministry, he didn't teach it publicly. He teach publicly only the handful of leaves. He only mentioned about the 10 perfection, but he didn't teach people how to cultivate. And he also didn't talk about the bodhisattva way. So the handful of leaves are actually the perfection of all the 10 paramitas. Because these 10 paramitas are the cultivation that you need to go through based on their understanding of the nature's law to perfect your nature to become a Sama Sambuddha. So Sama Sambuddha is like not only you are a Buddha, but you are a fully enlightened one. So the fully enlightened one means they have perfected their wisdom. They have perfected all of their virtue and wisdom. And because of that perfection, it's like the Noble Eightfold Path, this whole thing will merge with that nature and it will give rise to that type of wisdom and perfection of virtue and wisdom. And that will make the Sammasambuddha very, very wise. Give me a minute. Gomoy called me. We supposed to go for dinner, I think. I asked my wife to call her. No problem. So when it comes to this, the forest leaf, it is the Sammasambuddha's nature. That's why he has this 9 great virtue. Whatever that can be known, knower of the world. Whatever that can be known, he can know. So it's not that he is almighty, he can know everything. No. Whatever that can be understood within the conditioned world and the unconditioned world, he has the wisdom and the understanding. So this wisdom is not limited to Four Noble Truths for enlightenment, for cessation of form and mind. It's actually talking about the perfection of the 10 perfection, walking the bodhisattva way. And walking the bodhisattva way, as I have explained to you, there are many ways of doing it. And all of the Buddha who succeeded, they also know there are many, many ways of doing it. So not until your nature reached that perfection, you cannot have the all-knowing knowledge. That's why I told you, unless you are one of these great beings who has progressed quite far in the perfection, it's not easy to teach. Even this 10 disciples that Huining sent out, it's not easy for them to teach, because he has to remind them of how to teach. That's why he said, never go away from your self-nature. Always deliver from your self-nature. And this one, for normal being, normal enlightened being, they cannot do. They cannot do. Because the stability of understanding is not there yet. Then also the other thing is, all those, what they call, understanding of dependent origination, dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, and all those things, nature's law, their understanding are very, very, very deep. And it takes a long, long time for Sammasambuddha and great being to understand. Here you have to come for the living being through the vow. That's why the four basic vow, together with all the miscellaneous vow, the special unique vow that the individual bodhisattva has. So they will perfect and they will come in their own way, through their own understanding. Then you look at all the bodhisattva, they got different type of vow. All of them are very unique and very powerful. So even if you can combine all of them, you will still not complete. They develop the understanding, because the understanding is unending, unending. But there is a what they call a scale where Sammasambuddha realized, if you can perfect all the 10 perfections, then this understanding is become like reaching almost the limiting point. Limiting point means nobody has gone beyond that. Understand or not? You understand? That's why for Sammasambuddha, that is like the limiting point which they have realized. So all this Sammasambuddha, they have this ability to become Sammasambuddha, but they have perfected them all. And some go through wisdom way, some go through virya, some go through faith, like Pure Land and all, and take very long time. That's why, because of the aeons and aeons and aeons of evolution, that's why those understanding are not within the handful. And those are actually a lot. That's why the whole forest. And it's like limitless. Even the perfection of one virtue, adhitana, is so what they call immense. You can apply it in so many ways. Even the perfection of virtue like love and metta or generosity, it can be done with so many variation and with so much understanding and penetrative ways. So all this perfection, that's why when the Buddha said you cultivate until you have reached the perfection of virtue, that's why prajna paramita means perfection of wisdom. Paramita is perfection. It's not only you are wiser, you have perfected the development of that virtue of wisdom perfectly. Means you have understood all aspects of wisdom that can be understood. So that nature of a Sammasambuddha is very unique. Very unique. That's why it's not easy to become Sammasambuddha, but it can be done. Then what you mentioned about the Noma or those things is part of the way. When you go this way, your cultivation will reach all those stages. Well, like I told you, the five stages of Bohi mind development. Yeah? First one is very easy, isn't it? You just plant the seed of bohi and determine to go this way. Then you are on it. Then the second stage is follow your vow to develop the ability to endure and cease all affliction. So when you are able to do all this, then your bohi mind development will actually evolve until finally you reach the stage of you are able to touch your true nature, then develop the stability of understanding, then you hit the no mark cultivation, no mark of a cell, no mark of a living being or individual, and no mark of Dhamma and the phenomenal world. Then you know everything is not what you think. Then you realize the five degrees of form and mind is just part of the phenomenal world. The whole of nature, the secret of life is just like that. Then you can renounce samsara and do the perfection. You will finish it because time is no more a factor. There is no more a reality. Understand not? Just form and mind, no mark of anything. So there is no such thing as, like the thought telling you, this one takes so long. How can I go this way? No way. Like all those people who don't understand, I have to renounce the vow. I want to become arahant. That is the craving, understand? The ego come out again. I want to become an arahant. But what is an arahant? You don't understand. Arahant pertain to that form and mind within that line. So you cultivate sincerely without the atta, without the ego, then arahant can be realized. And arahant is not difficult. Like I say, during the sasana, the sainthood way is very easy. But the bodhisattva way is the difficult one. But even difficult, you have the understanding based on the bodhisattva vow, the blue book that I have taught you all. If you follow that, it becomes very easy because it takes you along by itself. Because all these things that I have taught you, if you make the vow and aspiration to have this understanding life after life and develop affinity, all the great beings, their vow will take you along. All these four basic vows, they have their meaning and purpose, and they will take you along. And all the 10 perfections actually can be perfected through all this. That's why without the four basic vows and the spin-off from there, you cannot walk this way. Then your affinity, all the great beings, is the one that will take you along. And you must perfect all of the 10 perfections, because they are your what they call virtue that allow you to make the adhitana. That's why I realize finally it's the adhitana perfection. That one can speed up a lot of things. Because that one go through wisdom, understanding, to arrive the causes and conditions. Then all this can be perfected. If you don't go through adhitana, it's very difficult. Then of all the 10 perfections, the Buddha perfected the virtue of truthfulness. But to him, he also realized all the 10 perfections are very powerful. So through truthfulness, he never debate. Because he is very sincere, very truthful. And the power of truth, that's why it's also invoked through adhitana, through the perfection of that virtue. Then the power of faith, like Amitabha Buddha, he perfected that faith until it's so strong. So saddha is the one that actually motivates the perfection, the cultivation. Life after life, that faith drives them. And they believe this is the one that can actually bring about the perfection. And he doesn't mind that it takes 3 times the length. Instead of 4 world cycles, he takes 12 world cycles to perfect the pure land and all those things. So these are all the understanding that different bodhisattva come and they develop the understanding, because they also saw the Sammasambuddha, how they fulfill their vow and how they develop the perfection. Then do you realize, like Kuan Yin, in the chanting you heard, when we read the Vimalakirti Sutta, We only talk about 90 million Samasambuddha that he met. You realize or not? But you know, Kuan Yin met out with how many, you know? Like you recited it, when you come to that part. He has encountered so many Samasambuddha. So, all this cultivation for you to meet out with so many Samasambuddha, you must have existed for how long? You tell yourself. That's why these are all very, very extensive cultivation of creepings. And this one can give you the understanding of the whole forest. And the whole forest that they have developed, they are focused on the spiritual understanding of life, spiritual understanding of the conditioned and the unconditioned world. That's why beyond all those things, there are still a lot more about the consciousness and all those things, which is way beyond the sainthood way. That's why the handful of leaves is just the very direct essential Dhamma to bring about that transformation to enlightened being. So that from there, if you take the vow and go the Bodhisattva way, then you can understand the forest. It's not you, it's your nature, understand now. That nature can be developed because the nature's law allows it. So it's that nature. So when you understand all this, then you know wisdom is unending. That's why a lot of these great beings, they take the vow to block their final enlightenment, but they want to continue with this cultivation for as long as the nature's law allows. That's why Titang Wang Hosa and all the other great beings, they had this very extensive vow to make sure that they can stay in this conditioned world for as long as the nature wants to. Because this Buddha nature, or your nature, your great being's nature, they can continue to perfect itself until you fully perfect. Even like Sakyamuni Buddha, he fully perfect, then he get to come one time as a Samasambuddha, 2,000 years ago. But it doesn't mean after he parinibbana he ceased to be, you know. No. He still has the Sakyamuni Buddha's Samasambuddha nature. The nature is within. That's why you can create affinity with him, you can pay respect, you can go for refuge, everything. Then you can actually develop the faith, and develop adhitana, vow and all those things. Then his nature, if his nature choose to come again, he can come again. But he is no more Sakyamuni Samasambuddha. Understand not? Because that one is a prediction, one time only. You can only come as a Samasambuddha in the form of mind one time. But that is your prediction. After you finish, no more. Then you have to come in whatever manner as a form of mind. Like anybody Sattva, understand not? But the nature has that type of wisdom of a Samasambuddha. But he will not be called a Samasambuddha again. But the nature will go into that form of mind. That's why they can still come if they want to. Then like Kuan Yin and all those things, their nature is everywhere. Whether they come or they don't come, it doesn't matter. Understand? Because their manifestation has become part of nature's law. Their vow has become part of nature's law. So you call upon their name, have faith, it connect, the nature's law will bring about the whatever response. So whether Kuan Yin come as another form of mind or not, it doesn't matter anymore. Because the manifestation is in the vow, in the nature's law. So a lot of these beings, they cultivate differently. That's why it's beyond the understanding of normal being. If you have not gone this way, you cannot understand. It's good that you ask that question because these are the teachings that's supposed to come out. It has been lost for very long. Then maybe for future generations, they will benefit. So, like I said, wisdom is unending because civilization is evolving, is unending. Understand? When condition become more sophisticated, consciousness become more sophisticated, understanding will follow. So different era, different time, different condition will manifest. Like now in our civilization, we think we are very advanced. No. Compared to the real advanced civilization, you are still very primitive. It's just like 100 years ago. We think we are very, very like advanced, like during the the beginning of the 20th century, not the 21st. Now we are in the 21st century. So beginning of the 20th century, we are still very backward actually. But we thought we are very great, that's why I got World War and all those things, you find. Then after you finish the First World War, Second World War, then because of the World War actually, the scientists were given the condition to explore more. That's why the scientific understanding take off. And because of scientific understanding take off, technological revolution come about. Then we supposed to go through this phase. Then after this, the technological evolution will continue because we will become very, very different. We will become they call the there is a name for it, what? The super race, I forgot, there is a you become different from normal being, because that time, by then, you don't have a physical form. You don't need a physical body, because this physical body limits you. They will have the technology and the understanding to go beyond the physical form. So like this Stephen Hawking, he also mentioned, he predicted, I think 300 to 500 years from now, human beings will evolve. This one too limited. Because this one cannot take you very far. Because you are trapped within the limitation of a physical form. So he believed science and technology can evolve until this consciousness, our this consciousness, we can go into something that is way beyond this one. They will come up with that technology and understanding. Then we are capable of a lot of other things. Then sometimes we don't need a physical form. We can live as consciousness. That's why the consciousness field will open up. Then a lot of new understanding will come. Then when you are in that civilization, that age, they call it the, I don't know, there is a name, I think. I saw this, what they call, under astro, there is this scientific friction, or what? They got a lot of this show of alien, extraterrestrial, and all those things. So they are talking about this super being, understand? Like alien, they come to our planet because they actually already very advanced, and they survive the destruction, everything. Then they are looking for civilization like us, and they are doing experiment and all those things. But they want to understand more. It's just like we all do experiment on the mice, you know, biology. Yeah? You call what? That one? You call what? That one? You make use of that to do scientific research. what was it? It's like your specimen. But there is another word. What is the word? Never mind. It's like you make use of them, understand not? To do your research. This extraterrestrial being, the higher being, or not higher being, the super race, I don't know what word they use. They are very advanced. They are actually doing this same thing like you do to the mice, on the human being, understand? Do you understand? They create the human race. You heard of this game they play, Civilization? You haven't heard of this game? The what? Last time when my son was young, they got this game in the internet. They call Civilization. No? I mean, what type of civilization you want to create? So you put in the condition. Your emphasis is on what? Spiritual or technological. Then the computer will generate that type of civilization for you. No? Then you will have very powerful emperor, very powerful dictator and all that. Where you stress on materialistic and all that. But when you stress on spiritual, the civilization will go the other way. Understand? No? So they are all trying out. No? So every time our civilization come and go, because this one doesn't survive, okay? Because they know lack. So like my son, they all play. They saw the civilization evolve, they don't like. Then they introduce other factor. Then the civilization come out to be something better. Then they like. Then after that, again meet with problem. Then introduce other condition. So they are trying out, understand? So that's why they are actually trying out a lot of this type of possibilities. And those that are very advanced, they will know. Then they go to the new planet. They will introduce all this. Then that planet become like a perfect world. All will have the 5 precepts, the 8 precepts, and all those things like what the Buddha mentioned. So there are this type of thing happening, but we don't know. Because you are limited to our civilization, to what we know. That's why the spiritual field, what is beyond, you all don't understand. Because when I met some of my teacher, they talked to me about all these things, opening the portal and all those things, which is way beyond what human being can understand. But my nature in the spiritual field, I know. I can understand, I can follow. Then they have this technology of pure energy, which is way beyond us. And they come from another universe. The evolution, that's why I say all this is going to unfold. And we are going to go through all this. If this earth don't destroy itself, then this civilization is going to be very beautiful. We have to go. 5:30, yeah? Okay. So I have to go end. Okay, good. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So thank you for your question. It creates the condition for this type of sharing. Then later on, like I said, as you all progress, more things will come out. Then more understanding will unfold. Because this one needs condition. If you are not ready, you don't have the condition, then all these are not possible. That's why since the end of 2014, beginning of 2015 onward, my nature realized the signs are there, the Bodhisattva way, it has to come out, and that was actually the thing that I supposed to do. When Maitreya requested my nature to come out to share, there are 2 parts. One is the 2 Dhamma that my nature have understood. That one I have done. Then 2015 onward is the Bodhisattva way, because my nature's way is very unique, and this way has to come so that you all save a lot of time and you can cultivate even without sasana. That breakthrough is very rare, very rare. That's why you have to make those affirmations. They only ask you to take the vow, but they never ask you to make aspiration to have this understanding life after life whenever you arise. Whether you choose to come or you have to come. All this will not talk. Then your affinity with great being, they don't know. They ask for their protection, blessing and guidance. They also don't understand. And this part is not, you check all the other vow of the great being. They don't have all this. That's why this nature through is adhitthana perfection. It come to understand that all this can be done. That's why it's a very different understanding. So all this is going to help the consciousness. Okay, let us sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us now maybe recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we will dedicate this marriage to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhobata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo ipina punya kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha, Guanyin Bodhisattva and other worthy ones.
Thank you.